You're listening to the Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast, where we look to inform about our upcoming events and give insight to behind-the-scenes happenings at the RSO.
Welcome, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here and give you some insights into our upcoming RSO at the Arcade concert. I'm Ben Fierer. I'm the assistant conductor of the RSO, which is a tremendous privilege to get to be a part on stage, behind the scenes. And I want to introduce our special artist for this concert, Joel Baer.
Hi, everyone. It's nice to be here.
So we're going to go back to the very beginning, which is, Joel, tell us a little bit about where you're born and your musical upbringing, how you got started into music.
Sure. Well, I was born right here in Rockford, Illinois. I lived here for a very long time before I moved to Chicago and then eventually moved back. My father is a rock drummer, and so that was the start of my musical upbringing, is hearing him play drums. And he exposed me to a lot of artists like the Beatles and the classic rock of his era, but he also played for me an album called Swingin' New Big Band by the New Buddy Rich Orchestra. And so that was my introduction to big band music, and I fell in love with the power and the versatility of that kind of ensemble. As I continued my musical education, I started taking lessons with Jack Brand, who was the drummer in Rockford for many years. And he became not just a teacher for me, but also a mentor. And so I'm here largely because of him.
I'm seething with jealousy. I'll tell you why. In fourth grade, I'm from New York, so we start lessons in fourth grade. And that's when you get to pick your instrument. Number one for me was drums. And my band director looked at me, and I was kind of tall and gawky, and he said, "Nope, you got long arms. You're on the trombone. Sorry." And I'm like, "What? No, I really want to do drums." So a bit of jealousy here, and this is now full circle. I get to collaborate with an incredible drummer. And
if it makes you feel any better, your trip to the gig is a lot easier than my trip to the gig.
There's good. There's that extra cartage involved with that. What I want to know is, what is the transition into and the interest into video game arrangements for big band? Like, how did that come about for you? And tell us more about Blue Shift.
Sure. Well, I started Blue Shift with my co-leader, Chris Parsons, who plays guitar in the band, in 2017. And we started as what we would call a stock chart reading band. We were playing famous band charts from, you know, Count Basie, Duke Ellington. And I quickly decided that we were never going to play a Count Basie tune as well as Count Basie. And I was interested in recording music, and so we began commissioning original music that wasn't video games. But I found that younger audiences don't really know the American Songbook tunes, and there is some interest but limited interest in original big band music. However, I loved the music that I grew up with playing video games, and I thought that that would be a fun way to bring people into this style and get them accustomed to hearing this kind of ensemble. I think when people think of big band music, they think of Glenn Miller or Benny Goodman. But when I think about big band music, I think of it as a kind of ensemble, the American orchestra. And so we started commissioning tunes. The first tune we ever commissioned was Chemical Plant Zone from Sonic the Hedgehog 2 for the Sega Genesis, which we've recorded since then. And the reaction when we played this live was immediate. People recognized those melodies. These are the melodies that people my age and younger have grown up with and have heard sometimes even more than pop music, more than music on the radio. These melodies are being played over and over while they're playing the game. And so these melodies offer us a really interesting chance to expand in the style of big band, to add shout choruses and ensemble sections with new melodies that are related to the original melody, to create something wholly new, but completely informed by the music of those composers. In the case of Sonic the Hedgehog, that's Masato Nakamura. So
that's amazing. As you can tell, it's so obvious that it's a natural next step for us at the RSO to want to engage, you know, the new generation of listeners. And this is a perfect example in the big band through the orchestral arrangements to reach people who love symphonic music that don't even know it. Actually, I'll tell you a funny story that I was just in Florida at a family event, and my sister-in-law, I was telling my brother, Josh, who's a huge video game fanatic, and my sister-in-law, Pam, and, you know, I was telling my brother, Josh, all like, oh, Mario 64, all of these ones that he's like, I'm there. Oh, I'm so excited. And my sister-in-law was like, no, I don't know that one. And then she's like, are you going to play Banjo-Kazooie? And I texted Joel, and he's like, he sent me the link. You had done the arrangement. And so she was so excited. They're flying here from New York just to see this concert. So, I mean, and that's just, okay, they're part of the family. So that's, you know, one thing. But I think that extends out, and that to reach a bigger audience and different age range of audience that, again, when you play those video games, the music is on loop. So it really gets into your, you know, your head in a different way than even playing a record or a you know, CD and everything like that. So can you tell us more about what were some of the, as you were doing these arrangements and you're trying out different, what were some of the surprises that you thought maybe this one was going to really hit and it didn't, or an arrangement that really spoke to the audience? Do you have any experiences that kind of surprised you along the way?
By far, our most popular arrangement is from a game called Donkey Kong Country for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. It's called DK Island Swing. It kind of sounds like Sing Sing Sing. That has been wildly popular. And like, I'm kind of even surprised by how popular it is, because I like that chart. I like that music. There are other charts that I like playing more, but that is the one that really seems to connect with people.
And that one has a kind of, it's like a jungle kind of feel. So in the jazz band, the traditional jazz band, what do you do to like supplement the percussion element? Do you bring in a lot of like more world music type of percussion to achieve that? How do you do those in the arrangements?
When I think about that tune in particular, in that kind of jungle groove, I'm thinking about Gene Krupa, and I'm thinking about Joe Jones from the Count Basie Orchestra and some of that early big band drumming, where the drummer's playing on the floor tom, and that's the sound of that music to me. So I'm bringing the percussion. It's all me. But harkening back to the greats, you know, who I was really influenced by.
That's incredible. Now, as you've done these concerts through Chicago, and you had that huge conference in D.C. Can you tell us about that one?
Sure. We played the Music and Gaming Festival, MAGFest, in Washington, D.C. This is a weekend video game convention that specializes in video game music. We were one of, I don't know, 40 bands that were playing, and in all different styles, rock, metal, hip hop. We were the only big band that was there, and we had a really receptive audience. It's so much fun to play for 2,000 people that know all these melodies. Every melody that we played, they knew before we, you know, as soon as I announced the tune, they knew. And not necessarily our versions of these tunes, but, you know, from the games. And so I think, because our music doesn't just, we're not just playing the melody, we're also adding so many sections and really making each tune a journey. And so that's what we're adding. So it's fun to see people react to the extra parts that we're adding to this music, but they still get that original melody in there.
I wish we could show a clip. I mean, the energy, you can on YouTube, you can even feel it. Like you must have had the audience mic'd, or it was just, it was such a different energy in that room. And I think that's another thing that's so appealing for us. We want to make this a different kind of concert, kind of bring the jazz band feel, the jazz club feel, into the concert hall. So people feel like they, if they like something, they can scream and enjoy or shout out. Go ahead.
The band will be doing that too. I mean, if somebody takes a solo and somebody plays something that another band member likes, they're going to let them know. That's what we do.
Here's a question I have for you. In your experience doing these concerts all over, of course you get the diehard video game fans. But has anyone come up to you? Do you have any feedback from people who may not be familiar with video games or at all, and they come to your concert but come away with something? Have you had feedback from people who just, you know, didn't get exposed to that music?
Yeah, of course. And the thing that I love about video game music, particularly the better end of video game music, is that the melodies are so good. They have to be by necessity, because if you're going to have maybe a 60-second loop of music and you're going to hear it over and over again, it's got to be memorable, and it can't get too tired. from hearing it on repeat. And so when we take these great melodies by composers like Koji Kondo, who I think is the John Williams of video game music, if you will, he was the primary composer for Mario and Zelda and a lot of other Nintendo music for about 15 years before he became kind of music supervisor at Nintendo and still contributed to those games but wasn't the sole composer. His melodies are incredible. He's a classically trained composer. And what I like about his approach is you can hear his influences. You can hear something where a level might have a music like a Strauss waltz. But it's not pastiche. It doesn't... he's not trying to copy Strauss. He's trying to evoke some of that feeling while adding some of his, you know, maybe it sounds like a Strauss waltz, but there's a little bit of jazz harmony in there. He puts his own twist on it. And that's, to me, what makes it sound like video game music. So we get people hearing these melodies for the first time, and they're completely blown away because they've never heard this presented in this way, so powerful. You know, that one of the unfortunate things about video game, early video game music, is the limitations of the system. For instance, on the original Nintendo Entertainment System, you had three possible pitches that could be played at any given time, plus one white noise channel that was typically used for, you know, like a snare drum or bass drum effect. However, if Mario hits a coin or a block, one of those channels has to drop out. The music has to drop out to facilitate that sound effect. And so in this very limited structure that Koji Kondo has to work in, he excels and is able to use counterpoint and a lot of other techniques to make full-sounding music with three pitches at any given time. And I think that is incredible. And what I like about what we do is we're able to take that limited music and flesh it out for an 18-piece jazz ensemble. And now in the case of this, 18-piece jazz ensemble with strings, which, you know, is so lush. As we were talking about on another interview, the strings just add such a lushness to the power of the big band. And I think that that's what really draws people in, is that power and intensity, but also all the sonic possibilities of first the big band and now big band with strings.
We were just talking about that earlier this week. As a conductor, I'm so excited to bring this collaboration together because the jazz band has such an immediate power, like with, especially with the drum set and the cymbals and all of those rock influences. And what's so incredible, what the orchestra can provide, is this sustained power and this lush, I use the word lush, lush, vibrant sound. So to mix those together, feel bad for whoever's doing the sound in the hall, because they're going to be very busy, because it's like all of the sounds possible being in like a candy shop. You get everything, the whole spectrum of sound, and powerful, resonant, beautiful music. And wow, I can't wait to be there on stage.
I'm so excited.
Getting excited. And now for you, is this your first time collaborating with strings? Have you done projects before?
I have played as a drum set player with strings, but this is and with a big band. There's a Beloit native named Tody Scodwell, who's a great trumpet player, who came back to Beloit to do a show, and we performed some older music, some American Songbook tunes with him, a big band, and strings. So I have played it before, but this music is considerably different, with a lot more modern influences as well as classic jazz influences and orchestral influences, and it's very complex. It's hard music.
And I want to point out that the collaborations that we're doing together, these were commissioned for the concert a week from tomorrow, So this is the first time they'll ever be performed, and we're hoping to do more in the future, but I think, as an artist, it's one of the most exciting things you can do, is bring something new into the world. And we're going to do it kind of, you know, I have my vision of how the orchestra is supposed to sound. Joel has his vision of how the jazz ensemble is going to sound. And we're going to meet together, and it's just going to be, you know, we're going to do it live in real time. So I can't wait for that moment.
Yeah, we're premiering a brand new piece, actually, for this concert. The opening theme from Star Fox 64, my very favorite Nintendo 64 game of all time, composed by Koji Kondo, although he didn't do the music for that entire game. But we're also doing a bunch of other Koji stuff from Mario 64 and Super Mario World. That's going to be amazing. It's fantastic music.
I'm thinking back to my early childhood when I probably was too young to play those video games, so I kept getting stuck on the same levels. So therefore, you just hear that music over and over and over, especially someone like me who's not that good at video games. So I can't wait for this, but it might bring a little PTSD and frustration back. I don't know. So I want to actually flip the table. We're at this nice table. I want to flip and ask if you have any questions to me in terms of like bringing it with the symphonic side of things, if there's anything like, or your bandmates were, had questions about if, as we brought this up.
Well, my first question to you is, what video games did you play as a,
okay,
as a young person?
So I, was really big on, so I have three older brothers. So I got kind of the best, brought to me. I spent a lot of time on Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64, Mario and Star Fox, and there's a snowboarding game called 1080.
Yeah, I got you.
You know 1080.
Of course.
Oh, man, so good.
Man, I didn't just get here.
No, I know. I'm just, you know, reaching into the all those hours, and of course, Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy VIII. There was two summers of my life that I probably should have been outside in the sun, but instead I was in the basement just living in that world of lush, you know, orchestral music, and just, you know, not getting enough vitamin D. So those were my go-to. Final Fantasies were the ones that they just, those are what we call RPGs, and you can, you really get into that world. You kind of imagine you're one of those characters.
Final Fantasy VII is a particularly long game. You can sink, you know, 30, 40 hours into that game before you beat it.
Yeah, it was a whole summer for me. Yeah, it was. Yeah, should have been studying or something.
And amazing
practicing
music by Nobuo Uematsu, who did all the music for the first 9 Final Fantasy games. And some of those games have 2.5 hours of music, you know, for those games, much more than like a Mario or something like that. And we're playing actually the big band is playing one piece from Final Fantasy VI. Which is celebrating its 30th anniversary. It came out in 1994.
That's incredible. Yeah, and I did also, you know, a little earlier, some of the just the regular NES, where the whole thing with the NES is, you know, the cartridges didn't always work. You got to blow or, yeah, you know. That was Mega Man for me. Mega Man, yeah, was
Mega Man 2. We've got some music from Mega Man 2. We're not playing at this concert, but that is considered some of the greatest video game music of all time.
I love how, like, what you said about the limitations of that sound system on the console. Somehow those limitations allowed the composers to think even more creatively, because like they didn't have that many tracks,
yeah,
to
by
work
necessity
with. You know,
they had to be extremely creative, and the melodies had to be good. I think I said this earlier, but not all video game music is great, but the great video game music is particularly good. And the best composers, like Koji Kondo, were able to take those limitations and turn them into something incredible that far surpassed, you know, 3 possible pitches at any given time. You know, it's good music.
What about you? How about, what were the go-to games for you from your youth?
Well, when I was in second grade, I traded my copy of Joe Montana's Sports Talk Football for Sonic the Hedgehog 2. I don't remember any music from Joe Montana's Sports Talk Football, but Sonic 2 had some of the best music I've ever heard. So I came out better for that trade. Certainly, I think the first video game I remember playing at a friend's house was Super Mario Brothers 3. For the Nintendo Entertainment System, which has amazing music, composed by Koji Kondo. And then Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo was the first time that Koji had an approach where he took a single melody that was kind of the main theme of the game and then reorchestrated it in a bunch of different ways for different levels. So you're hearing variations on a theme. You know, sometimes he'll take that theme and make it minor. Sometimes he'll give it a different genre, like almost a bluegrass or a ragtime feel versus a kind of orchestral feel or a jazz, you know, kind of a jazz 32-bar American songbook style tune. So the ability to take a single melody and just reorchestrate, reimagine it in a bunch of different ways, I think is a sign of an interesting composer. And it all works. And that's the one thing about Koji, too, that I love. We're talking a lot about him because we're doing a lot of Koji Kondo music at this, is always being able to marry the music to the gameplay and the level. So it, just like John Williams, I can't imagine Jaws without the music of John Williams, or Star Wars, or Indiana Jones. The music is its own character, and I feel the same way about the music in the best video games. The music is also a character that helps to enhance the gameplay, the level, but stands on its own as well.
It has all these like operatic elements as well, character development,
yeah,
everything.
Now, the characters have leitmotifs and themes. Yeah,
I want to ask you now, with Blue Shift, you've done several commercial recordings.
We have. We record for a record label in LA called I Am 8-Bit.
Wow. Can you tell us more about that? What is it like to bring this into the recording studio? And, you know, do you travel there? Where do you record them?
We typically record in Chicago. There are a lot of great studios, world-class studios in Chicago. It's a long process. We start commissioning music. Sometimes, for our first record, it wasn't even intended that those songs would end up on the record. We just started commissioning pieces, and then we kind of made a record out of the best of what we had at the time. We just finished recording a brand new album of some of the tunes that we will be playing, and we performed those pieces for a year before we went into the recording studio. And it was a two-day recording session, 8-hour days, recording to a click. It's intense. And that music in particular is very, like I said, very difficult, very challenging. It demands a lot of all the players across the band, and which you will hear next Saturday. But it's so much fun. I love being in the recording studio.
Can you tell us actually what is a click track?
Sure. It's a metronome that only the musicians can hear. Typically, they're all in headphones in the studio. Some bands do this live, although I feel that for big band, that kind of can make the feel of the music a little rigid. If you're performing live with a metronome, I think that as human beings, you know, we have a tendency to push and pull. And even though good time, great time is always the goal, when I hear a Count Basie song and there's a little push and pull between the horns and the rhythm section, it really adds some humanity and some feeling to the music. And so I never want to sacrifice that just for metronomic time.
If any of you have been to a live concert where the orchestra is playing and there's a film, live film, a lot of times there's an option for the orchestra to have either one ear as like a click track, and it's one of the ways you can really stay very close with the screen. So we do that as well in a live application. I'm wondering, what were some of the challenges that you had in the studio, like that were surprising? Because it's very different performing it in a club than trying to get these details to go out onto the record.
When we set up live, there's a configuration that's standard for a big band where the horns are in rows, saxes, trombones, trumpets, rhythm section together. But in the studio, that's not necessarily the way that you would set up that's best for recording. So typically the horns are in some sort of L shape, brass together, woodwinds on the side, and then the rhythm section instruments are all in isolation. So it doesn't feel the same as when you're playing live. And I think that's a little bit challenging to get used to that. It always takes a couple of takes or cuts or run-throughs of the song to feel how that room feels, to feel how the band is interacting in a space like that, where I'm in an isolation booth with the drums and the horns are all in the main room. And so they can't feel what I'm doing as much as they normally can.
Are you one of the first tracks to go down as the drummer?
We record live.
You do it live? Yeah. Oh, wow.
I think, yeah. I kind of believe
that's
in
interesting.
That. I kind of believe that, like, this music is meant to be played together as an ensemble. That's where the magic happens. So I'm not opposed to, like, you know, laying down the rhythm section and then each section of the horns. But for us, I really try to keep it a live recording situation.
No wonder you need, I mean, it's great to have a year under your belt of so you know those tunes so well that you can do that. That's very
exactly.
Challenging.
Yeah. You asked me to ask you a question. What are some of the challenges of working with a rhythm section in an orchestral setting?
That's a great question. That really is a great question. So sometimes, you know, normally an orchestra doesn't have a drummer. Sometimes we do with pops concerts. Last year we did, we had a jazz concert where there was a drummer up front, and that was really easy with Dee Daniels, if any of you remember that from a year ago. So that was kind of nice because the drummer and I could communicate, you know. But a lot of times the drum set is in the back of the orchestra, And so you're dealing with this time delay where it's like, well, we kind of have to anticipate yet feel the groove. So it doesn't use the word feel. I mean, it's much nicer to have that drum set up front and everyone can kind of feel it and dig in. So I'm happy that this is the case for our concert that you'll be kind
of
closer
up. They're going to feel it,
Ben. Yeah, okay.
They're going to feel it.
Yeah. You heavy on the bass drum or what? That's like, okay. You know, because conductors, we kind of are the drummer. We're kind of like the drummer, the lead singer, the harmony in one. So it's, I think one of the challenges for a conductor is to be able to communicate the tempo and then let it go. Let that drummer do their thing. You know, the feel, if it's a kind of a driving rock beat, or if it's laid back, or if it's a ballad. Because time is not, you know, there's lots of ways you can approach. Like you're saying, the click track, it only gives you a little bit of information. It's kind of like a measurement. But music is so much more than that when you're trying to, you know, create an atmosphere. Sometimes there's push and pull, or sometimes you want things to be delayed. Actually, I do remember last year with Dee Daniels, there was one ballad we were doing, Send in the Clowns, and she asked for something really interesting. So in classical music, we use the term rubato. Rubato, it comes from the Italian term rubare, which means to steal. And that applies to time. I just like the term that it's to steal. That's kind of interesting. I think what it means is you steal, but you give back. So what was really interesting is that she was taking a tremendous amount of time with her vocal line, but she asked the orchestra to be directly in time. So she didn't want us to go with her. And I was in the rehearsal, I wasn't sure how that was going to come across, but in the concert, it was just perfect. It was so brilliant, and because she was so seasoned. So that's the other thing, you know, when you work with people who have been doing this for so many years, drummers who just really understand how time works, how you can stretch and delay, and when to take time and when to drive. It's kind of when the magic happens, I think. You know.
Yeah. Are there any specific challenges to playing the music that you selected for this concert for the orchestra?
What I'm so excited about in next Saturday is, because we're sharing the program, we are, you know, each of us is doing half of the concert, essentially. So we had to whittle down to the best of the best arrangements. And what we talked a lot about, Joel and I talked about, is the flow of the concert. So we wanted to make this a journey, not just like, here's a cool piece, this is fun, so yeah, we wanted variety, but we wanted to really just draw in the audience. So for me, and I think with the orchestra, one of the challenges will be shifting gears so quickly, because we have some music that is, you know, very, very exciting and uplifting. Some that's really dramatic. I'm thinking of our one of the pieces from Medal of Honor, which is a military game, which has this reminiscent, you know, this field drum sound. So I think for us, it's that, you know, a symphony, we could kind of stay in a sound world for 30, 40 minutes. This is like, we have to really quickly shift gears between very different styles, like video game music is. It has so many influences from different genres. So I think that in the end, that's a really healthy thing for our orchestra to be able to do. But this is kind of a hyper version of that, where pretty much every 5 minutes we're into a new world, new sounds. Yeah,
it's one of my favorite things about video game music. Is you're going to hear the big band play like a very early Duke Ellington style piece, and then we're going to play rock big band music. It's, you know, like, it is a complete shift, and yet it all works together in my eyes because it's all video game music. And obviously it's big band, but that's what I love. I love the versatility of the music and that thread that ties it all together.
Well, all I can say is, on behalf of the RSO, we are so thrilled to have you and collaborate with your band, and looking forward to seeing you all there at the concert. Thank you all for being here today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.